Welcome back to the Talking Stocks podcast. Joe alongside Todd Campbell, as always. Todd, I have to say, I don't have much to complain about this week. It's been a pretty steady upward trend in my portfolio, at least. And that's more than I could expect for June, considering seasonality, right?
Yeah, I think you're probably not alone, Joe. I think a lot of people are probably breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief at seeing some of their account balances starting to move in the right direction after a little bit of a tough time since February. And, you know, you're not alone. I mean, I know my account is finally just about back to my drawdown peak, you know, from mid-February. And I'm sure our listeners are probably thinking the same thing if they're growth investors and, you know, have a pretty good amount in technology stocks.
Yeah, I've been up like with the exception of today. Fridays are a little variable, as we know. But yeah, I've been up like 1% to 1.5% every day this week. It's been wonderful.
If only we could just, and that's the thing, right? As investors, we extrapolate the good and the bad. So we come in, we wake up extra early, excited to see our accounts go up 1.5%, or, you know, we just expect doom to continue and we're getting beat up. And just, it's so hard, those biases in the way that they work on us emotionally.
That's right. So I want to get going because we do have quite a bit to talk about today. So we want to talk about Virgin Galactic first, having one heck of a day today. Then we want to talk about the tech sector, which is beginning to come around in our rankings, and we have some free research out on Seeking Alpha that we'll go over as well in that regard. And then I want to bring up a couple of IPOs that are upcoming. I believe both are next week, LegalZoom and Krispy Kreme. And so we're gonna do a read through of the S1 filings for both of those, like we've done the earnings read throughs in the past. So the usual sight unseen, and then we'll make a determination at the end, each of us individually, which one we'd rather invest in. And then of course, we'll finish up with the usual smattering of top stocks. So let's jump into it. Todd, I'm gonna let you kind of take the helm on SPCE here because I have admittedly not been following it. It's deep in a watch list of mine somewhere, but I'm not much of an expert. And I know you own it personally, so go ahead.
I do own it. I've owned it for a while. And, you know, it's really one of those it's one of those flyers, pun intended, right? It's one of these kind of stocks that it's very hard in certain industries. So you could look at space as being this massive potential market, but you can't even really define the market yet. You can make some assumptions. You could say, oh, well, there's space travel, and then there's space mining, and then there's, who knows? I mean, there's just so many pieces of that just haven't been fleshed out yet. And there's really no winner yet because the industry is so nascent. So it's really one of those industries where you look at it and you say, I am going to put a lot of faith in the fact that this was, you know, a Richard Branson, you know, a company, a Virgin company. And the success held in the past originally, you know, when I first got involved in it. And I'm going to recognize that this is one of the only ways that I can kind of pure play this space. You know, SpaceX, which is Elon Musk, that's not, you know, unless you're in the venture capital world, you're not going to get people to buy shares in that.
Right.
So it's one of those only ways that you can play that. And it's been volatile because there's a lot of people out there who are betting against it because this is not easy. You know, you're trying to basically, you know, make space travel as eventually as common as regular airline travel. And it's dangerous, it's risky. You know, there's all sorts of liabilities associated. What happens if, you know, the rockets crash? You know, there's so many things that could go wrong.
Not to mention it's extremely expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say it's impossible to value, But, you know, trying to apply any kind of valuation, I'm just going to share my screen too. So our viewers on YouTube, listeners, I'll walk you through the best I can, as we always do every week. I wanted to share with our viewers as well, just to see how crazy the ride has been, Joe, in Virgin Galactic. When we had the stock just take off in January, you know, $22, $23, the end of December, going as high as $63, Joe. And I will say, you know, one of my sayings is sell the vertical.
That's right.
I absolutely sold the vertical. I kept, you know, a core exposure to it, you know, but yeah, I reined in my exposure. And then I bought it back too early, Joe, because you can see we peaked out at 63, right along with regular technology stocks peaking out in February. And you can see that Virgin Galactic's actually been in drawdown and still actually, even with a 32% move up today, we'll get to that in a second, is still in drawdown from its peak in February. I did buy it back a little too early. I bought it back somewhere in that March time period when it was falling back to the 200-day moving average. I ended up sitting on a loser going all the way down to 14. Now, we've talked in the past. I use charts to help inform my buying and selling decisions. But in a company like this, where I'm making a bet on something that's so far out into the future, I'm not going to let technicals are not really going to have much of an impact on me. I'm not going to sell it just because it's below the 200-day moving average, I should say. Okay, so this is one of those forever kind of mindset stocks for me, where I'm just going to let it run, whatever happens, happens with it. So I looked stupid for a little bit, but I was still up overall because I think my original cost, Joe, was around 10 bucks, 10 or 11 bucks was my first buy in this. So I was still up overall. And then today, geez, and we've rallied off that low in May of 14. And then today got up to almost 40 yesterday. And now today trading at 53. And at one point was up over $14 today, which is now, I think my average cost overall is now 14 because of additions.
Still so pretty good.
I'm doing pretty well with it.
Yeah. So I have two follow-up questions. First follow-up question is there any particular cause behind this massive move, or is it just noise and Reddit doing its thing?
Well, FAA came out and apparently granted it a license to do commercial space flight. And, you know, I think the reporting I saw is the first company to receive that quote unquote blessing. So I think that people just are looking at that as being one check mark in a box that's necessary for the company to continue to move in the direction that it's hoping to move to. Is this an overreaction? I mean, up 30% in a day. I mean, it's probably a little forced short covering. A lot of people betting against the stock, probably a lot of people, you know, trying to flatten out their positions and their exposure because something indeed did get check marked off the list that sounds encouraging for the future. So that's the news, Joe. That's the news that the FAA is granted it this license, and theoretically that's putting it one step closer to ultimately being able to put people on a plane that goes up high into the sky, gives people a little feeling
to the moon, some might say.
Maybe someday. And then, you know, advancing that whole concept of space tourism.
Yeah. So last follow-up question. Are you selling this vertical?
No, not today. No. And the reason I'm not, let me go back to my chart again. I stopped sharing it. Of course.
Gee, I thought this was going to be a really simple yes, I'm intrigued.
Now, here's the thing. I sell verticals when they're breaking out, when they've all-time high verticals is really where I get really, I'm going to sell it. So when you're making an all-time high vertical, then, you know, this kind of chart where here's the old prior cup. The beginning of the cup was 36, right? So then you clear the cup and then you go boom, 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 3 days. And I think it's, was it Marty Schwartz who said 3 days is usually that's you want to start pulling some in there. I think that was him. But anyways, so we got boom, 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 three, sell on that gap up. So if you look at this is where, I mean, you could argue that this is one massive cup going all the way to 63.
Right.
Now there's a gap here that theoretically at some point could get filled, right? So that's a risk that I'm taking. And yeah, we're up 33%. So tomorrow, hey, you could get back 10% and that would still be fine because it's really only a third of the move up, right? I'm fully willing to just sit and let that go. If this was a 3-1-2-3 move and we were way above 60 here, so maybe 70 or, you know, towards 80, then yeah, Joe, that's, I would sell that. But a one day spike like this with this kind of a setup, I'm leaning towards just letting it do whatever it's going to do.
All right. Interesting. That's good info. So
what's that old saying, Joe? You have rules and then you have to, one of the rules is knowing when to break the rule.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. I think so. So let's talk tech. We have not talked about tech a whole lot, honestly, since the winter time, January, February. There's a reason for that, and there's a reason why we're talking about it again. So we have some new free research up on Seeking Alpha. Todd, I believe you identified 5 specific stocks in that research that you're especially optimistic about. But just generally speaking, it's safe to say tech's kind of coming around now, right?
Yeah, I mean we. You know, I think that the tech started sliding down our large, mid, and small cap sector rankings at, you know, early in the year, and it shifted below average, I think, some point in April. But really, the basket's been under distribution since early February, kind of like we were just looking at that earlier, the Virgin Galactic chart and how it peaked in February. And I think if you look at most technology stocks, especially the high-flying technology stocks, that's kind of when they were peaking out in that February time plan. And you're still in drawdown since then for those stocks. So, you know, we have been below average for a couple few months. And I'm going to just, you know, like you said, we did post some free research, the Seeking Alpha. We'll throw a link to the show notes so you can go to that. There's no paywall associated, I don't believe. I'm pretty sure you could just click on the link and go to it and read the article. But I'll go ahead and I'll share my screen again and just go over to the article on Seeking Alpha. You can find us by just, you know, searching Limelight Alpha, Seeking Alpha, and it's technology stocks are skyrocketing, top stocks you can buy, right? Okay. And I want to go down here, Joe, and just scroll down to this chart right here where it shows technology average score in our universe versus the universe since 2013. And you can see that, you know, it's not abnormal or completely crazy that technology scores below average. It's done it before, it'll do it again, right? So 2014, it's been 5 months below. 2016, it's been 3 months below. 2019 into the end of 2018, where the market was weak, spent 2.5 months below. And then the question mark actually removed here because maybe we're back finally here, as you can see on the right hand side, back to the average score. But it's been below really since, you know, the beginning of the early in 2021, and then of course accelerating downward. And if you scroll up a little bit now on this article, you can see we actually put the sector ranking as it stands right now for large cap. And yes, energy, REITs, and healthcare still at the top. But Joe, I've highlighted it. Technology right there, mid-pack.
Yep, that was in the basement as recently as I think 2 weeks ago. Had a red highlight next to it, and so now we're in the middle of the pack. And yeah, it's just from the, you know, from my perspective of seeing this every week for almost a year now, I think it's really interesting to see how consistently these different sectors will kind of cycle through on the leaderboard, and they'll work their way up and then they'll pretty reliably work their way back down. We've seen that with energy. Basic materials was high earlier in the year, and now it's at the very bottom. So it's a very useful tool to just get a very basic high level idea of what sectors are doing.
Yeah, best. And I'm sure we have subscribers out there that do ETF strategies that rotate very aggressively based on the sector rankings towards particular baskets. I use it more to kind of help me with my tilts. So if I want to be tilted slightly more towards energy, for example, the last 3 months than I am towards technology, or if I'm looking to add new stocks to my portfolio, like we talked last week about healthcare and how healthcare is strong scoring now. So I want to have more healthcare stocks in my portfolio. So I think it's a very useful tool, you know, and you just going back, I mean, a lot of people just say, well, why don't you just buy? Yes, there are technology stocks that if they're forever names that I've just held on to through this whole mess. But I think it's instructive to kind of, to your point, to look at what the returns have been for this basket. I don't think people may not realize just how painful painfully bad the returns have been in technology the last 3 months while it scored low in our ranking versus these other options. So I created this chart, and it's in this article that we linked to in the show notes. And you can see OIH was the energy service ETF since mid-February is up 24%. Joe, the technology ETF, XLK, is up 6%. So you're talking about a 16% roughly outperformance for energy service. XLE, which is the energy ETF, up 22%. The real estate investment trust, IYR, is the symbol there, up 16%. Financials up 14%. Again, crushing the returns of technology. And then the S&P 500, obviously the benchmark that you compare everything to, up 8.7%. So you can see how the XLK really has been a laggard since mid-February. Now, we're not out of the woods yet, Joe. This is encouraging, right? It's encouraging to see large cap tech, which typically large cap will move before mid and small cap, up and down our ranking. So it's encouraging to see this happening. No idea where we go from here, but it certainly does give me enough confidence, especially since July is historically a pretty darn good month for the NASDAQ, to go out and take a look at some of the stocks in the technology sector. Matter of fact, Joe, if you'll bear with me 2 seconds, just looking down at Stock Trader's Almanac for July, to give people the real notes, the real numbers here, so that I'm not just talking. Post-election years, according to Stock Trader's Almanac, the NASDAQ is up an average of 3.4%. Normally, it's only up 0.5%. So in post-election years, particularly, July has a tendency, and it's usually front-end loaded the first half of July, to be very, very strong for technology stocks. And then, you know, the way I'm modeling it, Joe, probably would be in general would be to kind of rein in some gains in mid-July from that basket if seasonality does prove to be to hold true.
Yeah. So we have scrolling down through here, there are some specific stocks. I'm guessing some of these will show up in your smattering later in this episode, if my instincts serve me right. So we will certainly get to that later. Just looking at the sector rankings this week and the best stocks by sector list that we publish once a week, there are a lot of new tech names in there. So you'll see if you're a subscriber, if you're not, free trial below, that anything that's highlighted in that kind of golden yellow, Those are new in the best rankings. So their score has dramatically improved over the past week, and there are a lot of new yellow highlighted names in tech, and we'll get to some of those later. So now I think it's time to pivot into some more live read throughs. So
reaction time.
Yes, reaction time. So
again, I haven't cheated, Joe. I have not cheated.
Good. I cheated just a teeny bit just to see what we were kind of getting into. So we're gonna look at two IPOs that are coming next week. LegalZoom, which will be symbol LZ, I believe is scheduled to premiere on the New York Stock Exchange on Wednesday, June 30th, and Krispy Kreme, symbol there, DNUT, D-N-U-T, is scheduled to premiere on July 1st. So, Todd, which one do you want to start with?
Oh, I don't know, grab bag. Well, you know, I love Krispy Kreme donuts, so.
All right, let's do Krispy Kreme.
If you want to pull up the Krispy Kreme one, we'll give that a go. And what, you know, that's good branding on their part, donut for the symbol.
Yep. It's good. They could have easily done D-O-N-T, which probably would not have been great branding. So I'm glad they went with D-Nut. Yeah. So here, listeners, we're looking at their S-1 filing right now. And so there's a lot of kind of fluff in here that we're not going to get into. But basically we're looking at the things that I'm interested in personally are the financials over the past 1 to 3 years, what the share price is going to be, and how that looks for evaluation. So just a little background on the company here. You know, most of you have probably had a Krispy Kreme donut in your life. They're delicious. They've been around for many, many years.
If you like Krispy Kreme donuts, smash the like below.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, here we go. So fiscal year 2020, they did $1.1 billion in net revenue. Adjusted EBITDA of $152.8 million, adjusted net income of $47.9 million, which ended up with a loss of $60.9 million. I'm not terribly surprised by that. A lot of companies had a tough 2020. I'm sure Krispy Kreme was no exception, having to close storefronts. I imagine some of their stores probably completely shuttered for at least a brief time, and then obviously it would have been like drive through only after that for quite a while too. So
that's probably looking at this chart here, and listeners, I'll just explain what I'm looking at. If you're not on YouTube, you can also go to the YouTube and just go to YouTube and see these if you want to look at the charts after. But I think, Joe, maybe that's one of the reasons, you know, in the S1 you're always kind of trying to put your best spin on it possible because you're trying to attract institutional investors to own your shares. But you do have they're showing the 5-year compounded annual growth rate of 19%. So I think that's probably one of the reasons why, you know, they're showing that longer term view, because you're right, you know, kind of hard to imagine. Although they probably do sell, Joe, maybe we'll find that out. They probably do sell in a lot of, you know, grocery stores and convenience stores. Maybe you can get them there too. You don't actually need to be one of the physical stores. I mean, they talk about global points of access, right, Joe? They say that
that's right.
There's 8,275 points of access, up from 5,720 in 2016.
So a point of access would be a place where you can buy a Krispy Kreme product. Is that correct?
Yeah, it shows, let's see, it's 3. So we'll go down to note 3, global points of access, all locations where you can buy donuts and cookies.
So yeah, so there's a combination of other stores that aren't owned by Krispy Kreme, and then their company owned stores, and they have franchises as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, just gives you a general idea here. I just noticed this line and I have to point this out. They consider themselves to be part of the $650 billion global indulgence market. I love the phrasing there. And that is a huge market, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, let's find the biggest number that we can possibly put into.
That's right. I would love to know all of the things that are in there. It's probably like a combination of like candy and ice cream and luxury goods, and who knows, they might even throw like travel and leisure in there too. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a global market for donuts. I've never been somewhere in my life where I haven't seen anybody not eating a donut. So, you know, it has global appeal, as they say here, beloved global brand with ubiquitous appeal.
Yeah, ubiquitous.
Yeah,
we're going all in here on the phraseology.
Yes. So we'll scroll through all of this kind of fluff here. I'm not all that interested in any of this because there are no numbers. I swear they had, yours of financials here, but maybe I was looking at something else. However, I do have another tab up that has their financials. So we'll just pivot over to this. So I'm just taking this off of a website, stockanalysis.com, gives you 2018, 2019, 2020 financials for DNUT. So you can see revenue growth in 2020 was actually about 17%.
Geez, that surprises me, Joe, right? I mean, I would have almost thought that it would be down with so many fast food stores.
I think so too. I think that's a good sign for them. Yeah. And I imagine that they will put up some pretty big numbers this year. So I'll be excited to see that first earnings report, whenever it is, probably in August or September, I would think. So yeah, they did lose quite a bit of money. This is a bit concerning to me because they lost $12 million in 2018, $34 million in 2019, so pre-pandemic. And then 2020, they lost $60 million. Not
they're profitable on an great. Operating basis.
They are profitable on an operating basis. And that did increase from $34 million to $38 million 2018 to 2019. As you might expect, that went down quite a lot in 2020, down to $4.28 million. So they have a nice gross margin here.
Yeah, I mean, is it just the interest expense? Do they have a lot of debt?
I guess they do.
2%.
Because that is a hefty interest expense of $57 million in fiscal year 2020.
Yeah, if I'm reading that right. I mean, go to the balance sheet up top there. If you click on balance sheet,
let's see. Here we are.
Long-term and short-term, where are we here? Liabilities, total debt $1.7 billion, so
that's quite a lot,
up 10%. Yeah, considering their revenue.
Yeah, that's concerning.
Their cash is $38 million, and their debt is,
yeah,
their current debt alone is $224 million, so yeah. Current debt being debt that they have to pay off within the next 12 months.
Yeah, that's definitely concerning. But we've seen debt-riddled companies, I'm thinking of GameStop here, that the internet rallied behind, so much so that they could eliminate all of their debt. So you never know. I could definitely see this becoming a meme stock of sorts. You know, it's kind of silly. The symbol's a little silly. It's donuts. I think there's definitely potential that Reddit could get behind this. Todd, is there anything else you want to look for before we move over to LegalZoom?
One of the questions that I have is, if you control F and search international, let's see if they give a breakdown of what their international is versus US.
All right.
Let's see here.
I'm guessing it's going to be towards the top, right? You're looking for like an itemized
revenue. Yeah, I just want revenue. To see how much of their revenue comes from international versus the U.S. Because to your point, I mean, here we go. DFT Pro reaches 4,700 doors across the U.S. and Canada, 2,100 doors internationally. So definitely still very U.S. focused. Keep going down, Joe, and let's see whether or not we can actually put a number on it. I'm sure it's in here somewhere, listeners, if you want to go back and look through the S1. And I always encourage everybody who's doing IPO, going to be investing in IPOs, read the S1. I mean,
oh, God, yeah.
Packed with information. It's like the 10K and how important it is just to.
Oh, here are the financials. I didn't scroll down far enough.
Yeah, okay. So product sales were $313 million in net revenue in the quarter ending April 2021. So, okay. So that's just, in the first quarter. So their sales were up pretty nicely, actually, in the first quarter, year over year. And they still lost money, though. And that interest expense was what, $8 million? Yeah, $8 million.
They lost money, but they lost a heck of a lot less than they did last year. So
way less.
I guess that's
11.5 million loss in the same quarter a year ago versus a 3 million loss in the most recent quarter. That just goes to show you, right? As people get back in, those sales start to come back in.
Yep.
I think I saw their operating margin, Joe, was about 4% pre-COVID.
Yep.
So not a hugely profitable company on an operating basis.
Yeah, that's a pretty thin margin. So I've still looking like for something. Margins. Still looking for something international. Here's some more. In the United Kingdom, 21 of their stores remain closed. Remained because this was as of January. Yeah. Yeah. But still, they did have to close some stores completely.
75 shops representing 7% of total shops international. So
that's
they actually
significant.
Have a lot of international shops.
They do, which is good.
Still closed. Yeah.
Definitely seems like the type of store that you could see in an airport somewhere, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I don't know, Joe, like what is your, we obviously haven't dug in this. We're going to want to dig in deeper. And if your listeners, if you're going to buy this stock or you're interested in Krispy Kreme, cause you love the donuts, you're going to want to read this more thoroughly than the, obviously our, you know, 5-minute overview looking
right.
at some of these things. But, you know, Joe, what is your gut telling you about Krispy Kreme?
I think I would want to see, I say this a lot about IPOs when we talked about them in the past, Coinbase was a great example of this. I would want to see like their first earnings report as a public company. Just because like the last year or so is just, it's not a really great indicator of how the company is actually doing. Cause there's been obviously the pandemic has just thrown a wrench in so many things. So I know that's a bit of a cop out. I don't plan on investing in this out of the gate. I'm really more interested to see who is investing in this, if it's institutions or if it's the Reddit institution.
Yeah, I mean, brands, I do love consumer brands that are very well known. And Dunkin' Donuts did get taken out, I think, by private equity. And Starbucks has been a massive winner.
Sure has.
So I guess the question would be, and maybe our listeners can comment below, and just let us know, like, if they've been in Krispy Kreme stores and if they're innovating on food. I mean, that's been a big thing for Starbucks, is being able to innovate with drinks and food and get people to move beyond and explore some of these other things other than, say, you know, the deliciously glazed donut. My God,
right.
those things are crack. They're so good. Wow. So, I mean, I do love consumer facing brands that are well known. So will I buy an IPO? 80% of stocks undercut their IPO price within the first, I think, I want to say 9 months or something like that. So if I'm not allocated, which I won't be because I'm not putting in for it, then I'll probably just sit on my hands and watch a trade and get established. But I am, like you, very curious
yeah.
to see who supports this. Is it will be institutionals or is it going to get, will the meme crowd adopt it?
Yeah. So with that, let's check out LegalZoom because I'll admit I did take a peek at this as I was preparing for the show, just to make sure that, you know, everything checked out. One thing I will note for those of you who are watching, the formatting on this form is garbage. So it's, as we get further down, it gets kind of hieroglyphic. We'll do our best. But this one I think is really interesting. So again, this is LegalZoom. This is going to be ticker LZ. And they are scheduled to go public on the 30th, which is next Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken. So again, you can see what I mean by the formatting. It's a bit hard to read.
Give a quick overview, Joe. I mean, I'm a little bit familiar with LegalZoom.
Sure. So basically what LegalZoom is, they say like their mission statement is to, I believe they say, to democratize law. And so it's a tool for especially small businesses and small business owners to essentially outsource, almost crowdsource their basic legal work. So the biggest thing that they do is they help with like company incorporation. So as you're starting a company, you have to incorporate as an LLC or an S corp or a C corp or whatever. And they have lawyers, kind of like how Fiverr has experts in all sorts of different niches. It's just that they have one niche, which is business law. And so they have people that you can connect to. So again, this is, you know, we've seen this kind of like democratization theme with many companies recently that have done really well. I mean, some that come to mind, Fiverr, of course, Airbnb, I think would fall into that category. The other sites, Upwork, you know, anything like that, that basically it's like kind of an open marketplace where you could, if you had the correct credentials and the correct expertise, you could sign up and help people on this platform. So that's pretty much what this is.
Yeah, and Joe, I just, you know, going to their website, it looks like you can make wills, you can do.
Yeah, so it's a little bit more than, it's a little bit more than just basic business stuff. But I believe that the business side is their primary driver of revenue.
Butter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it looks like, to your point, one of the things that jumped out at me on their website was that it's flat fee. So rather than, you know, worrying that someone's running up your billable hours, they come up with a flat fee. So you can either do it yourself, it looks like, or you can use their platform to connect with a lawyer who will do this stuff for what it appears to be a flat fee. So anyways, that's the.
Yeah. So let's dive in. So first we just have some highlights here. We're still kind of in the intro. So they did $471 million last year, 2020, 27% year-over-year revenue growth from Q1 of this year. I don't exactly know what this means. Subscription revenue mix.
So there must be a subscription offering, Joe, that allows you to pay a certain amount of money to access basic stuff or get discount or whatever.
Yeah, maybe it's like an enterprise version for a startup that has a lot of patent and trademark stuff that's kind of ongoing. So 2% net margin 2020, 19% adjusted EBITDA margin. So let's get through the fluff here. I'm actually just going to scroll down and find their financial statements because I think that'll be more helpful, and then we can kind of go from there. All right, so here we are. So this is, again, this is really hard to read, but I believe what we're looking at is the year ended on the left. We have the year ended December 31st, 2020, and then we have the most recent quarter ending at the end of March 2021. So it's a little bit hard to figure out.
Formatting help on this one.
Yeah, seriously, they need to hire someone on Fiverr, I think, to clean up this garbage formatting. Yeah. But anyway, so we can see that they did this 2020 heading is out of line, but basically in Q1 2020, they did $105 million. Q1 of this year, it was $134 million. So some pretty nice growth there. Gross profit went up from $70 million to $90 million. Again, pretty good. Their interest expense is certainly more in line with what I'm comfortable seeing. I don't know about you, Todd. And then, where are we with net income? So, this is interesting. So they made money in 2019 and 2020. But then in Q1 of 2020 and Q1 of 2021, they lost money.
Yeah, we might want to control F seasonality. A lot of times, listeners, if you're looking at a 10K and you're trying to see whether or not, explain why one quarter is good or one quarter isn't good, sometimes many companies will say right in their disclosures, right in that file, in the 10K, they'll say, okay, yeah, our first quarter is weaker than our fourth quarter or whatever. I mean, think like retail. Retail is going to have obviously very big seasonality that's going to be back end loaded toward the end of the year where the holidays are.
Yep. All right. So here's a little section on seasonality. We have experienced and expect that we will continue to experience. Oh my God. Add some more words, legal Zoom. Jeez. We seasonality in the number of orders placed when we enter into subscription agreements with customers, higher number of orders and enter into more subscriptions in the first quarter of the year. But that doesn't make any sense. Then why would they be losing money in the first quarter but making money for the rest of the year?
Well, they may not be able to report it all in the first quarter for the subscription.
Maybe. Yeah. Further seasonality is reflected in the timing of our revenue recognition in the second quarter. Okay. When we typically experience a high amount of revenue from orders placed in the first quarter, but fulfilled in the second quarter. Okay. That's surprising to me though. I would think that they would have high seasonality in the first quarter because tax season, and then the fourth quarter because end of the fiscal year. But I guess not.
Yeah, they say winter
really.
Holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people thinking, I'm doing it. And then New Year begins and people start getting excited and thinking about, you know, getting their ducks in order and then recording that Q1 revenue orders rather as revenue in Q2 and then weakness in Q3. Okay. So
yeah,
theoretically,
so just...
Q2 looks like their best quarter of the year.
Which is the first quarter that they will report as a public company.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting to see. I'm just scrolling through to see if they have any more like meaningful mention of seasonality.
One of the other tips and tricks, listeners, that you can do when you're looking at these data, and I like to do it, we probably won't do it today because of time, but you can also go through, and I like to track the change as a percentage of revenue of the operating expenses. So for example, the thinking would be, okay, well, if there's leverage in the business as sales grow, then sales, general, and administrative expenses, SG&A, should decline as a percentage of revenue as the company gets bigger.
Yep.
So I like to kind of track that trend. So that's something else that you can do, listeners, with some of these companies that you're trying to figure out how well they're executing and where they are in the maturing level. Obviously, you know, young technology companies plowing money into headcount, you don't want to necessarily penalize them. But as if for a company like this, where it's a little bit more mature, people are familiar with it, it's been around a while, I would be curious to look at that at some point. So,
yeah, I'm going to do us a favor here and I'm going to pivot over to this tab, which is the same site I was on for Krispy Kreme, just because it's actually legible.
Oh, wow. It's actually
so,
usable.
I know. Isn't that wonderful? And we can like, you know, click on different links and it brings us different places. Isn't that wonderful? So yeah, this is easier to read. So we see 2019 to 2020, they had 15.2% revenue growth. So 471 million up from 408 million the previous year. The cost of revenue did not go up as much, 155 compared to 137. So their gross profit went from 271 million in 2019 to 316 million in 2020. Pretty good, I'd say. So then the all important net income, 9.9 million in 2020, up from 7.4 million in 2019. So they have a nice gross margin of 67%, operating margin of a little over 10%. Slightly concerning that that's down from 11.3 in 2019. But again, as Todd kind of mentioned, like they're probably just really trying to increase headcount. And those are just some growing pains that we can see with rapidly growing companies like this. So
it could also be one-time legal fees,
right?
Getting ready for their IPO. There's a lot of different things that can to maybe impacting that.
Yeah.
But
so
I would definitely
not
want
a,
to watch that chain. Trade.
Not a huge, decline here, but, and it's not something to panic about, but yeah, as Todd said, something to watch. So what do you think about this, Todd? Does this look better than Krispy Kreme?
Well, the funny thing is that you know, looking at that S1 and now the formatting, like all the legalese in there, it's like, okay, so some of the LegalZoom attorneys built this thing. It's a little too much. They need to modernize that a little bit. I think that this is very valuable. It could actually be a big trend to exploit as we go increasingly towards contractors and gig-oriented work and away from the traditional, we're going to sit in a cubicle at a big organization in a big high-rise in a downtown city. A lot of people are going to have to form their own LLCs to protect themselves. And, you know, they probably aren't going to use, some will obviously use local lawyers, but, you know, a lot of people will probably turn to the interwebs to try and figure out, you know, solutions. So I think that there is some pretty good tailwinds for this. I do like that they're profitable and that their revenue is growing. And I think that financially, from financial metric standpoint, it looks better to me than Krispy Kreme. The one thing that I'm not going to invest in either of them right now. I'm going to watch how both of them go. I feel like this company could be very business cycle oriented. So I want to do a little bit more research into how that, well, you know, how well did it do during different periods, or how might it do in different periods where, you know, the economy falls into recession?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, right? Because we're not used to tracking public companies in the legal industry, because obviously those are usually private partnerships. So it's kind of a new horizon. And so just out of curiosity, Todd, do you know, like, what sector will this fall into in our research eventually?
That's a good point. I mean, sometimes these service providers end up in very weird places. It may end up in services. It could also end up in financials.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait and see. And just as a reminder, listeners, IPOs won't get scores in our research, in our scoring model, for a number of months. So we won't be able to add these right away to the research to give you a score that's usable, because a lot of our score is based on historical data. And frankly, until they're publicly traded, we don't have any historical data that we can put in there.
Absolutely right. Yeah. So just to wrap it up. I agree, Todd. LegalZoom is definitely, it's a better looking company on paper. I'm going to be watching it closely. I'm going to have it on a close watch list, because I think that they have the potential to keep growing, and they could potentially use this IPO as a way to accelerate their growth. So I think both are worth watching. Don't get me wrong, I'll have both on a watch list, but I think Krispy Kreme is probably going to end up on my kind of Wall Street Bets meme stock-ish watch list. The same watch list that Virgin Galactic is on. You know, highly volatile, kind of somewhat unpredictable price movement. So I think that's a good wrap on that conversation, unless you have anything else to add, Todd.
No, I think that's good. I think it might be time for smattering.
I think it is smattering o'clock.
All right.
So take it away. I think we're going to see a bit of a tech theme here. Maybe some more healthcare like last week.
Yeah. I mean, I've actually got some healthcare stocks this week I want to share with some people. And I've got some technology stocks, because we're seeing that move up the ranking as well. So I think that, you know, we've got a good grouping here of names that you can add to your watch list. And I guess what I'll do is I'll again, for listeners on the podcast, thank you so much, by the way, for listening and tuning in every week to our show. Thousands of you tune in every week to listen to the Talking Stocks podcast. We are just so grateful for that and that support. And if you're watching here on YouTube, please like, smash that like button and subscribe so you get updated every time we post these. We're trying to do more and more content on YouTube for you. So I'm going to share my screen, Joe, and bring up, still on Virgin Galactic from earlier today when we were looking at it. Not going to recommend that as part of our smattering today, given the 34% move. But the first stock I wanted to mention today was Sea Limited, SEA Limited, symbol there is SE. This comes from our ADRs and foreign stocks best and worst list. It's a high scoring stock in our research that's growing really rapidly, and it plays in the e-commerce, digital entertainment, and digital payments space. This has been a hot name on FinTwit. And Joe, it check marks a lot of boxes for me. You know, we talked, any listeners, if you've tuned into the show week after week after week, you're starting to notice a trend in the way I look at stocks when I'm thinking about them. I love companies that are playing and growing total growing markets, right? So, you know, e-commerce, checkmark, digital payments, checkmark, digital entertainment, checkmark, right? So there's some checkmarks for C Limited. I like fast growing companies that are growing 30% or more in revenue on the top line. And if you look, Joe, at the first quarter, C up 147% year over
little,
year.
A little more than 30% there.
Yeah, a little bit more than 30%, right? So checkmarking that. Doesn't make money yet, but that's okay. This is a fast-growing company. And again, all I care about is the trend and is there a pathway to profitability with these companies. And then from a technical standpoint, Joe, I like the setup. You probably know what I'm going to say. Down here,
I do.
Not a lot of red days. Not a lot of volume on those red days. Pretty solid volume on the up days. And we just broke out to the pivot point above the prior peak in February and in April. So this stock is no longer in drawdown. And I love it when they break out and then they give me an entry the next day. So we broke out yesterday and today it's pulling back a little bit on what looks like it's going to be low volume. This is not a bad place to take a swing at C Limited in my view. Next up, healthcare, Roche Holdings. And again, from our ADR best and worst list. Excuse me, I had to get a sip of water. So Roche Holdings, big conglomerate, produces a lot of drugs for a lot of different indications. They dabble their toe in you know, like genetic testing and that type of thing. Big company with fingers in a lot of places of healthcare. And, you know, again, Joe, huge volume on this run up. ADRs don't usually trade as much volume every day as trades on the New York stocks trading on the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ. So I don't worry too much about these crazy looking gaps on ADRs necessarily. But we did have that breakout. We are pulling back to the 21-day moving average on volume that's lower than the buy volume as it was rising. And my feeling would be here, okay, take a swing and see if it can move back up into the pivot point and go higher. And like I said, Joe, I'm looking for names that can in healthcare to increase my exposure. And this company's does a tremendous amount of business across healthcare, tons of very, very widely used medications in its product lineup. So Roche Holdings is one that's intriguing to me. Next up from the ADR list, Dassault Systèmes. Symbol there is DASTY. They do 3D modeling, simulation, help you design virtual worlds and prototypes, and you know basically stress test those things before having to invest all the money in actually producing them. So the company is very profitable. Going to grow revenue, well, grew revenue 10% in the March quarter to $1.4 billion roughly, and earnings per share expected to be up 14% this year and 10% next year. Broke out to brand new highs this week, Joe, and again, on volume, and then you have the breakout in the down day today, so I think not a bad spot to take a swing at Dassault. And then, Joe, I don't know if you've ever done any travel to Mexico. Next one up here is Volaris. Mexican provider, ultra low cost airline service to Mexico and select destinations. And this is really, again, a play on, okay, pack your bags and let's get moving around the world in a post-pandemic vaccinated world. And I think that, you know, Volaris stands to benefit from it. You've got a huge accumulation occurring through this in the middle part of June. You've got the stock flirting with, you know, highs on the daily chart. And the potential to significantly see its earnings per share grow in 21 and 22. And I know a lot of people, Joe, because of concerns about getting back into the US, have been delaying. Like, for example, my mother used to live part-time in Mexico and hasn't been there in 18 months because she was concerned about, will I be able to get back? So, you know, I think that there are some pent-up demand for travel to resort or vacation destinations. We talked earlier in the show about that technology free research on Seeking Alpha. Google. We'll put it in the show notes. We have a link to it. So if you want to read that article on technology moving up the ranking, one of the five stocks in that article I highlighted was CrowdStrike Holdings, symbol there is CRWD. And Joe, quick question. Do you think that cyber attacks are going to, the number of cyber attacks are going to increase or decrease in the coming 10 years?
Not even a question. That should be a statement. The answer is overwhelmingly yes.
And do you think that those attacks are going to innovate and that the these attackers will change up how they're going to be attacking?
They do every single time.
Absolutely agree with you. And that's why you want to own CrowdStrike CRWD. CrowdStrike's got an interesting business model in that it aggregates information across all of its clients to look for common themes in AI that it can use to benefit each individual customer. So it's crowdsourcing threats to be able to provide a better level of coverage to the enterprises that sign it up. So growing very fast for obvious reasons, 70% year over year in the quarter ending April 30th to $302 million. Earnings per share expected to be, wow, in fiscal, okay, so 27 cents in fiscal 21, 39 cents in fiscal 22, up 44%, and 70 cents in fiscal 23, up 79%. And again, like I said before, Joe, I love these when they break out like this did this week to a new high, and now we're pulling back down to the bottom level of that pivot, maybe giving us an opportunity to get exposure to that stock. Next one up, Live Nation Entertainment. This kind of flows into what we were talking about a few weeks ago with WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment.
Sure does.
And yeah, again, post-pandemic, let's get out there, let's do stuff kind of play. I won't even bother looking at the revenue on this because obviously there was no live entertainment, you know, during the pandemic. So your comparisons are kind of irrelevant. But maybe it's relevant to the degree that it shows you just how much it could bounce back. So in first quarter, it's down 80% year over year. So if our assumption is that we're going to get it back to going out and doing things and seeing acts live, then Live Nation might be a stock that you want to get into your portfolio. The symbol there again, LYV. Next up is in healthcare again. Looking at insurers, Joe. Insurers, especially within Medicaid and Medicare, because Medicare benefits for the demographics of an aging population, and Medicaid theoretically could benefit if we get any form of healthcare reform under the current administration. Molina is one of the big players in Medicaid, providing Medicaid services within various states throughout the United States. It's been acquiring companies, it's growing internally and organically. As a result, revenue up 43% year over year in the first quarter, and they're expected to earn $16.35 a share in 2022, up 23% from 2021. As far as technically, hit the bottom of its channel on the chart around 240 about 2 weeks ago, kind of in no man's land in the middle of that, bumping its head up against the 50-day moving average now. Maybe I would wait, see if it can get above the 50 and then pull back, hold the 50. But, you know, I don't mind this kind of a setup. So I think you could probably go ahead and take it here and then just put your stop loss if you're going to use one below that for Molina Health. Symbol there is MOH. Next up, Ulta Beauty. I think we talked about this on the show, Joe.
This has definitely been in a smattering in the past, but worthy of being in again.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is one of those plays where you probably know people who are customers of Ulta Beauty. And I think if you ask, I'd be curious, ask them and put in the comments below. Ask them if they're spending more or less time going to Ulta Beauty, more money on Ulta Beauty products. I think as we get back out in the real world again, you're going to see people spending more money again on beauty care products. And I think Ulta is a key beneficiary of that. You've got a nice base on the price chart going all the way back to March with it trying to break out this week to new highs. And this is a very profitable company, expected to earn $13.90 in fiscal 23, up from $11.97 in fiscal 22. So Ulta Beauty is one that I would put in there. I own this next one, small cap, high risk because it is such a small cap company, only a billion market cap company. Optimize RX, OPRX is the symbol. revenue up 48%, Joe, year over year in the March quarter to 11 million. 90 cents of earnings expected in 2022, up 80% from this year. And what this company does, Joe, is it helps connect, we'll say, medical salespeople, so pharmaceutical reps, to doctors through the doctor's current workflow. So rather than showing up physically in a doctor's office and asking the secretary, can I speak with Dr. Blank, and trying to pitch your product that way, this kind of just shows up in their electronic health system that they already have in front of them as they're meeting with their patient, trying to figure out, okay, what prescription drugs or what interventions might be helpful to you. So it's kind of digitizing the sales process for these companies, and obviously a nice COVID tailwind for it. And I think, you know, if the assumption would be from here is people realize it's a little cheaper to market to these, you know, physicians digitally than it is to actually send someone knocking on a door. So OPRX is the symbol there. Again, big volume on the up day, coming up against the old high it set in February. Joe, what do you think? Do we have time for one more? I know we're going long.
Go ahead.
All right. In healthcare again, Ironwood Pharmaceuticals, IRWD is the symbol there. They make a drug called Linzess. Linzess is co-owned by AbbVie, so they split profits and costs on it. Revenue in the first quarter up 11% to 89 million. They do earn money, 90 cents expected in 2021, $1.12 expected in 2022. The stock has moved, Joe, from about 12 bucks to 13 bucks, so about 10% in the span of a week or so. Pretty big move for this company. And I think that it's moving on the thinking that, okay, maybe somebody, AbbVie, whoever, is just going to buy them outright and take full control over Linzess and whatever they may have kicking around in the pipeline. I don't buy stocks solely because I think they could be M&A targets, but I do think that it is a company that could be an M&A target. And it certainly is intriguing, high scoring in our research, and checks enough boxes where if you get a down day of a couple percent, maybe try to buy it somewhere, you know, around that $12.70 range and see what happens. And I guess that we'll call it a wrap there, Joe. I lost count. No idea how many ideas.
I've got it here. Today. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Nice, even 10 today. So excellent. Yeah, hope you all enjoy that. And I think, yeah, we're getting a little long-winded. Sorry about that, everybody. Hope you don't mind. So with that, I think we'll leave it there. And so, yes, stay tuned. Listeners, if you're not subscribed on YouTube yet, please do. Link will be below. Yeah, we're making a push to get up to the 1,000 subscriber mark so we can start to monetize that. So
we're inches, Joe, inches from 500.
We are getting there. We're almost halfway there. So we really appreciate the support. If you'd like to support us a little bit more, subscribing to us on YouTube and watching our videos there is one easy way to do that. So we'll leave it there, and we'll talk to you all next week. See you, everybody.